Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and really pleased to welcome back Patricia McConnell, our certified animal, applied animal behaviorist, dog trainer extraordinaire, and all-around great person.
Keep talking, Larry. Keep talking.
She has a new book out. It's called Love Has No Age Limit, Welcoming an Adopted Dog into Your Home. And I've had a chance to go through the book, and I'm telling you, if you have any ideas about getting a dog and having a dog into your home, you better have a copy of this book. It's a wonderful guide.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And it's, you know, part of the motivation for writing it is that the co-author, Karen London, and I had so many clients who, yay for them, adopted an adolescent dog or an adult dog from a shelter. And all the books are for assume you're bringing home a puppy.
Yeah.
And there's some things that are the same, whether it's an older dog or a puppy. And there's some things that are really, really different. And so we wanted to, one, encourage adoptions. There's so many dogs out there who need homes, and so many of them are such great dogs. But we also wanted to decrease returns, because that does happen. You know, people adopt a dog, and then things don't quite go as they expected. In some areas, there's one research study that showed in some areas as many as a third of the dogs who were adopted are returned back to the shelters or the rescue groups. And we want to decrease that number radically. We want to increase adoptions, but we want to turn that dog from new dog into great dog.
Well, it's a great book, and I really Renee has been after me to get it to have it.
I was going to ask Mueller.
We haven't quite gotten to that stage yet. Now we're in a new house, and we
Emily's
need to be a little
seven, almost seven.
It's going to be almost.
Almost
she's eight.
Eight. This is a good age.
I know. Yeah. So it's, but I can tell you right now, I'll have that
go.
My back pocket, because there is a lot there for anyone who is bringing a new dog home. And then also, I think I like the back part of the book too, where you zero in then on some specific behavioral issues that often crop up.
Yeah, but the first half of the book is about preparation, is about the first, you know, what do you do when you like drive up to your house and you've got a dog and it's a new dog and it's from the shelter, so it's about the first day. Yeah, it's about preparation, it's about getting ready beforehand, it's about how to introduce the dog to family members, how to introduce the dog to other dogs, how to introduce the dog to your cat if you have one, etc., and establishing a relationship with a dog. So that's the first half of the book. And then the second half of the book is about troubleshooting, basically. Mm-hmm. It's like the manual, the troubleshooting part for the new machine that you just bought. And it goes over the most common problems that people have to deal with. You know, house soiling is one of them. And that, Larry, is often preventable. That's one of the mistakes people often make. They get an adult dog, they think, hey, he's house trained. Well, he was at Joe's house, or he was at the foster home, but that doesn't mean he's generalized the concept of
to every house.
To every house. Yeah. You know, we have this concept of a house is a home, and if your house broken, your house broken, but they haven't generalized it yet. So one of the most important things that we advise people is treat the new dog, even if he's 6 years old, like he's a puppy. Take him out every 15 minutes. So if that doesn't get resolved in the first 3 days, then we talk about house soiling problems and how to deal with them. Separation anxiety can be a problem with dogs from rescues and shelters. If a dog is, some dogs from rescue groups, especially who are from, for example, puppy mills, those poor dogs, they've never been socialized. They're really afraid of people. Those are special cases. And we talk about, you know, what do you do if you go to pet your dog and it growls at you because he's afraid, because he's never had positive contact. So there's the troubleshooting section and there's the prevent trouble section.
Do animals in shelters or rescue groups, do they have more behavioral problems than others?
That is a really great question, and it's a controversial one. There's actually a behaviorist who I shall not name, who stated that all dogs in shelters are severely damaged. I completely disagree with that. I absolutely disagree. There's no data to support that. As a matter of fact, there's data that
goes the other
suggests
way.
The opposite. There are lots of great, great dogs at rescues and shelters. Does that mean every one of them is going to come in 2 days be the perfect dog? Absolutely not.
No.
You know, absolutely not. But there are a lot of good dogs there, really, really good dogs. But, and here's the but, one of the biggest reasons why people return dogs to shelters or rescues is about their expectations. People tend to have, obviously I'm talking very broadly and generalizing,
sure,
but there is a tendency for a lot of people to think, I'm getting a 4-year-old dog, and he was really nice in the shelter, or he's really good in the foster, and so I don't expect there to be any issues to come up. I'm not getting a puppy. I expect the puppy to have to learn not to chew on the remote control and to learn not to pee on the living carpet. But I'm getting an older dog. And what often happens, Larry, is that on week 2, a problem comes up. And it tends to be scarier. That's the impression I get. And I've been through this, too. You know,
sure,
I've adopted older dogs.
Yes,
and you're like... There's this buyer's remorse feeling on week 2 or 3 of like, what did I do? What was I thinking? Because you expect to have to go through a lot of issues with puppies. But people have different expectations of adult dogs. And when we ask shelters and shelter workers and people in rescue groups, what is the most important thing for people who've adopted an older dog, not older as in old, but not puppy, what is the most important thing for them to remember? And just astoundingly consistently, people said, patience. patience. It'll be okay. It'll be all right. You know, the dog is going to need months to learn your house and your rules. And you do have to train older dogs because they don't know your rules.
Yeah. Well, we have lots of people who want to visit with about this very thing. Judy in Door County has a question or comment. Judy, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and definitely I'll have to go and get this book.
Great.
And I think I need help with the second part of the book. We have just adopted about a month ago, a little more than that, a 1-year-old border collie, and we've had border collies before, and he is wonderful. He's just the joy of our lives. And he is so good. You know, he will do everything we ask him to sit, to stay, to as long as he's on the leash. And he loves the treats. He loves everything. But you take him to a dog park or you take him any place where you can let him off the leash, and he gets a look in his eye, and he takes off. And he will not respond to his name. He will not. You could hang a, you know, sirloin steak out there, and it doesn't faze him in the least. And there are no dog classes starting where we live until fall. So do we just not ever let him off the leash until, or take him to a dog park until we're positive that he will come back to us?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, do you have any suggestions about that?
I do. And this is, I'm so glad you asked this question because this is such a common problem. You know, when we start with a little puppy, they have this following response that's instinctual. And then they get to be adolescents and they start going like, But if you've done your training right, you can get that through that relatively easily. But you have a grown dog, mostly an adolescent dog, basically, who's clearly learned it's fun to run away from your human. So there is lots you can do. And the first thing you can do is exactly what you asked, is do not let him off leash until you work through this, because there's nothing you can do that's more reinforcing than yee-haw, woo, who knows what I'm going to find out there. I might find fox poop to roll in, woo-hoo, you know. So you do absolutely want to prevent that, but you're going to be able to work your way up to that most probably. What you're going to start doing, and I'm pausing because there's not a come training section in Love Has No Age Limit. Mm-hmm. There are in my other training books. What you're going to start doing is teaching him to come to you as if he was a puppy, except on a leash. I would get a long line, And basically, you're going to start very small. You're going to start, first of all, teaching him attention. You're going to say his name. He looks at you. You give him a treat. You're going to start walking around outside and teaching him that you are the most interesting game in town. So, one, you let him go two steps ahead of you. He's looking the other direction. You say, what's his name?
Ollie.
Ollie. You say, Ollie, come. And you're going to clap and smooch and run like heck the other way. Border collies love to run. He's going to chase you. He gets to you. You go, good boy, and you give him a great treat, a piece of chicken, something really, really good. You do that like 10 times in a row, right? And then gradually you let him get a little farther away from you, a little farther away from you. But always do this online at first. Try and change. You might want to have a long light line and a leash, and you very ostentatiously take off the leash so he thinks he's free. Woohoo! But you can prevent him from running away. So gradually you're going to work your way up to him.
And being... it's okay for him as a border collie to not be able to just run. Is he going to get all wound up inside?
It is. I sympathize. It is very tricky. This is a dog who definitely needs to get physical exercise. So get as much of that as you possibly can, whether you teach him to run alongside a bicycle or you start running. I could never do that myself.
My husband can do that.
But your husband can do that. So get him some of that exercise. As importantly, get him mental exercise. Teach him a lot of tricks.
Okay.
And there's one other quick thing that's a great, great idea from a German trainer whose name I'll think of in a minute. I can't find it right now, but she has a great idea, which is basically you go on walks with your dog out in the woods or the country or the dog park, and you hide. She calls it, you create a sausage tree. So you might want to do that, not do it at a dog park where there are other dogs, but you go walking somewhere out in the country, in the woods, a friend's yard, and you're walking with your dog, and you go, Ollie, look what I found. And he turns and you've smished a piece of sausage and a foot up into the bark of a tree and you show it to him. And then you go somewhere else and you go, Ollie, look what I found. And basically Ollie is like, this person is the window to the wonders of the world. I'm going to pay attention to them. So that's another idea
Thank
for you.
Thank you so much. And loved reading your article about you and Willie in the Madison magazine.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling, Jody. Appreciate your call very much. Good question. Joe in Sparta. On to you now. Hi, Joe.
Hi, guys.
What's on your mind?
Well, I've got a strange one. Our daughter adopted a 2-year-old rescue dog from a puppy mill. It's a schnauzer poodle mix.
Okay.
Nice dog, but it's nuts. The dog will only respond to our daughter, no one else. We dog sat the dog a few weeks ago, and the dog spent the whole time wandering around our house trying to avoid us. When we go near her, she'd go the other way. And she does this with everyone except our daughter.
Yeah.
And there seems to be no way around it. She just, we have to basically corner her when we're watching her.
Oh,
and,
so sad.
She's freaking out. And
yeah.
She actually pooped in fear one day when we got a hold of her so we could take her out to go to the bathroom. And we're kind of at wit's end. Our daughter's supposed to be taking it to doggy puppy training classes, but I'm not sure that any of this is going to help.
Might not be a good idea.
I'm wagging my head back and forth violently as in no, no, no. First of all, I'm so glad you called, and I'm so sorry you're dealing with what regrettably is the profound damage of puppy mills. And, this is one of the ugliest secret of this country. I do not understand why there are not more social forces trying to close these places down. It's so sad. It's heartbreaking what happens to these dogs. And I see it over and over and over again. So one, regrettably, this is a very common problem of dogs from puppy mills in that they are profoundly neglected, they're profoundly abused, they're never socialized, and they often, not always, depending on their genetics, but they often come out terrified of usually everybody, but eventually one person. That's exactly what tends to happen, is they're terrified of everybody but one person. They finally get comfortable with one person. But there is good news here. The good news is that this case, because of its extremity, this is a case where I absolutely want you to talk to your veterinarian. This is a perfect case for using psychopharmacology with anti-anxiety medication that's going to help your dog. You do not want a tranquilizer that just makes her groggy and sort of stupid. You want something that truly resolves her internal physical, physiological anxiety. So talk to your, you know, the doggy equivalent of Xanax kind of idea. So talk to your veterinarian. If your veterinarian isn't comfortable with psychopharmacology, some vets are, some vets aren't, then you might want to talk to a veterinary behaviorist or have your vet talk to a veterinary behaviorist. But this is this kind of case where it's been so long and the dog is so terrified of unfamiliar people. There's not a lot of behavior modification you can do in these kind of cases without getting a jump up. So get the pharmacology on your side, change the dog's physiology, and then you can start doing classical conditioning. You can use my booklet, Cautious Canine, talks about this kind of method where basically you just not go after her. You'd sit in the chair and you toss pieces of really great food, little pieces of liver or beef that you've chopped up, and you just toss them over your shoulder. You don't look at her. You get her used to you being in the room and you tossing food. And it can take a year for those kind of dogs to come out of themselves, but you definitely need some help physiologically.
And what would be some examples of the pharmacology that would normally be used in that situation?
Well, that's the kind of question that vets don't like me to answer.
Oh, all right. So we won't answer it then.
So, there are a lot of different medications that are used in human medicine that are also being used in canine medicine. So,
gotcha.
You know, from the SSRIs to the benzodiazepine groups. But, you know, that's definitely a question for your veterinarian.
All righty. There you go, Joe. Thanks, and good luck to you. Appreciate your call. We will take some more calls in just a minute. Our guest today, Patricia McConnell, has a new book out. It's called Love Has No Age Limit, Welcoming an Adopted Dog into Your Home. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join in with your questions as we talk about welcoming an adopted dog into your home, what to do, and if there are some issues, how to resolve them, as we visit with certified applied animal behaviorist Dr. Patricia McConnell. Betty in Kenosha has a question for you, Patricia. Let's
Hi.
Go there. Hi, Betty.
Hi. I live in an apartment that's very pet friendly, and I have two cats. Ow, one of them. Sorry.
One of them just bit you?
Yeah. I'm petting him, and I guess I just overdid it. Anyway, okay. And I'd really love to, for a long time I've thought about adopting a very small dog from a shelter, like that was maybe, I don't know, old enough so that I could walk him enough. And because, I mean, just I want to be sure he gets enough exercise.
Yeah.
And I'm worried about, bringing a dog into a small space that has two cats in it. And one of my cats was, I adopted him off the street, and he does great with me. He loves me. He's scared of other people. Mm. I think he's okay about dogs, but he's very possessive and jealous, so I think he would be bothered that I'd bring in yet another animal for me to love that would take away from him. And I don't know, do you think there's any way I could make this work?
Yes.
Ah.
Will it be easy? No. You can, you know, it's very common, no matter what the species, whether cats or dogs or your children, to be jealous, if I can use that word. I'm comfortable using that word with our pets, possessive about something they really, really want. And what could be better than you, right? You know, there's only one you in the world, and look at what you provide. You're the window to everything wonderful, right? So there are methods that you can use, partly operant conditioning, partly classical conditioning, where you're basically convincing your cat that it's a good thing that this little dog came in. You're absolutely right, I would get a small dog. And I would get an older dog who's been tested to not be cat reactive. The last thing you want are yeehaw cat chases, right? Running around your small space. So get a dog who's been tested. Maybe an older dog. There are an awful lot of older dogs that need homes in rescue groups and shelters. But, and that's going to be to your advantage. It's not going to need as much exercise. It's not going to be, you know, sort of likely to chase around your cat. And then what you're going to do is you're going to basically teach your cat that if you let me pet, let's call your new dog, oh, I don't know, Brenda. Let's say you get Brenda. And Brenda's a little Bichon poodle mix. And so you want to pet Brenda. What you're going to teach your cat is if you sit over there 3 feet away from us while I pet Brenda, I'm going to throw you pieces of liver. Or I'm going to throw you pieces of tuna. I'm going to throw you pieces of food you really, really like. So you're basically, so your cat's going to be like, would you pet Brenda now, please? And you absolutely can do this. I know when, Larry, do you remember when I was first on your show 8 million years ago in the Cenozoic era or something? You and I had talks about, can you train cats? And I remember a million years ago, Larry was like, can you train a cat? Well, now he's had cats for decades, you know, and he knows
they can be trained.
And he knows as well as anybody in the world that you can train them. It's sometimes a little more challenging than with a dog, but actually if you understand positive reinforcement, it can go really smoothly. So I would consider it. I would definitely consider it.
Good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Christian in Oshkosh. Hi, Christian.
Hello. Just wanted to share a success story, actually. We got a Newfoundland from the shelter here in Oshkosh, and it was my wife's idea, and I went to meet the dog, and I got to admit that I was very skeptical of this actually working out because she was in really, really bad shape when they found her, and scared of everything,
aww,
and seriously underweight, and obviously also a puppy mill mother who had escaped or been let loose or something. And what we did was we fostered her for about a month or two because I was not prepared to commit fully to this dog because this was a limit case. And that really worked out. I think that, if you have the feelings that it might work out, but you're not 100% sure to like commit, that the fostering, is a good trial period to get things going. And I think the other thing that really helped in our case was we had another dog who was very peppy, social, and really showed Maggie how to be a dog.
No.
So many good points there. I'm so glad you called. Thank you so much. Thank you, one, for adopting the Newfie. And thank you for bringing up these great points. The one about fostering, oh, this is such a good idea. You never really know what a dog is going to be like in a new environment. The best behavioral evaluation is only going to tell you how a dog is going to respond at that time, at that place. And so even great progressive shelters that do really good behavioral evals, They can't guarantee you how that dog's going to behave in a different environment with a different social setting, et cetera, et cetera. So fostering is just a great idea because you're trying it out. You're not going to feel guilty and bad if it doesn't work out. A month at least is a good idea. You often don't have a clue really who you've got until about 3 weeks have gone by or so. So it's a wonderful idea. I highly recommend it. It's a great idea. And the other point about dogs being facilitators for shy dogs is another really, really good idea. It can backfire if you have too many, like if you have, 10 little rat terriers or something, and you get one rat terrier from a puppy mill. Very often that dog has so much social interaction with other dogs that they're not going to create a social bond with you, with a person. But if you have one other dog especially, that can be really helpful. The first caller who had a border collie, the second one who had the little poodle schnauzer cross. That's, you want a second dog? that's another idea for them. But thank you for that success story. There are so many out there. If I can just interject, Larry, one of my favorite parts about the new book is that the photographs in it.
I love the photos. And now tell us where you got them.
I sent out a request on my blog for people to send in pictures of their rescued adopted dogs for a potential cover. For the cover, we got over 850. Seriously? It turned into this huge project. And it was the most wonderful project I think I've been involved in, because most photos came in with a story. So we got so many that we ended up putting a photo of some of our favorite photos at the beginning of each chapter. And the cover dog,
a great one, on
Theo,
the cover.
dog was picked up on the freeway in New Jersey. He's now a certified therapy dog, an assistance dog. And you can read all the stories of the dogs in the book on my website. It was really gratifying for us.
And you can go right now to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We've got the cover of the book up on, and also a link to your site. So,
great, thanks.
So take a look at The Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you'll see that great picture.
Theo.
Thanks, Christian, for that great story. Now, we have, as long as we're on the Facebook page, we had a Facebook comment from Barb, our week two shelter dog story. We adopted a young, about 9 months old terrier mix 3 years ago. After 2 weeks without a single accident, he started pooping on the floor immediately after coming back into the house. This went on for a week, then completely stopped. Not been a single issue since. You're right, patience is the key. If we had returned him because of this issue, we would have given away the friendliest, happiest dog we've ever had.
Oh, that's such a good story. That's such a good reminder. You know, I had a older, mature dog in the house last year sometime, and within a couple hours, she, totally house trained, lived in the house. She peed in my dining room, and then I treated her like a puppy, and that was that. Never happened again. You know, so you know, something that I like to add about these success stories, which by the way, I love hearing them. But one thing I want to add is that, you know, not everybody can foster a dog. Not everybody is in a position to adopt a dog from a shelter, but we know that 2 to 3 million are euthanized every year. It's way down from before. It used to be 7 yeah. million. It's way down. But it's still 2 to 3 million dogs, you know, who don't need to be dying just because they don't have a home. But one of the things that I'm excited about this new book is that we basically are donating a significant amount of any profits from it by making the cost really, really low. It's a 100-page book, and if it's bought in bulk, so that shelters and rescue groups can buy it, it's only $2.95 per copy. So one of the things that people can do, if you can't foster or if you're not in a position right now to adopt a dog, is to donate a bunch of books mm-hmm. to your local shelter. And that's self-serving to me because, you know, it gets books sold that Karen Lennon and I wrote. But the whole goal here for both of us is to get dogs out of shelters and keep them in what we hope are their forever home. So that's just another way that you could participate in helping out these really cool dogs who need homes.
We have an email from Diana in Cornucopia. She says, we recently adopted an adult 2 to 4 year old lab from our local shelter. Have been able to solve most issues except for two. Hates being brushed. In fact, hides when the brush comes out. Next, does not seem to be able to play, loves to retrieve and land in water, but it's a job not a fun thing. We're used to having a dog that just likes to play. We've had him 8 weeks.
Interesting.
I retrieving to me would be a form of play.
Well, but you know, I mean, that's. I see what you mean, because I sort of thought the same thing when I first heard that. But, you know, dogs can do that with great seriousness, you know, sort of intensity and seriousness and a certain amount of angst about it. You know, you can see they're really tense.
Oh, gotcha.
And then they never play with toys by themselves. There's never that sort of joyful tossing the toy up in the air. There's never that happy, 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 here's a ball. Do you want to throw it again? Here's a ball, right? And that's what you want to see. That is not at all uncommon for dogs who have had certain kinds of upbringings to not be real playful. I think there's almost a kind of a window, a developmental window, if dogs aren't allowed to play with objects. They grow up in the end of a chain, for example. It's like it's gone. But the good news is you can often bring it out. It can take a long time, so patience comes up again.
Sure.
It can take as much as a year. But you can do things like get hollow toys, like get, you know, Standard Kong, my favorite hollow toy, smear some food inside, let your dog start licking the food out and learning that, ooh, this object is really fun, and that can just ease them into carrying it around, maybe starting to play with it. So that's one thing. The brushing issue, that's, you know, some dogs just, oh, they just hate the feel of it, or somebody did it in a way that scared them. So with the brushing, what I would do is I would ease your way into it. I would use a lot of classical conditioning. So I would basically, if it was me, this is my dog, tonight I would sit down on the floor and I would put the brush on the floor. I wouldn't even have it in my hand. I'd put the brush on the floor. And every time my dog looked at the brush, he'd get a treat. So I'd get a little box, a little bag with me of like 50 tiny, tiny little treats. You're not going to mess up his diet. You're not going to mess up his tummy. Right?
Sure.
But maybe if he loves his kibble, even in a little pieces of kibble, and that's part of his dinner. And so every time he looks at the brush, he just happens to, you're going to give him a treat. Or just even comes into the room. Some are so bad they won't come in the room if the brush is on the floor. So then you're going to pick up the brush and give him a treat. Pick up the brush, give him a treat. Pick up the brush. And then you're going to touch him and then give him a treat. And touch him, give him a treat. You might, so that's one helpful hint. This could take, you know, you might spend 6 weeks on this. Don't brush for long. Brush for just like one stroke treat. The other thing to think about is some of those brushes, they're horrible. It took me years to figure this out. You put them against your own skin, you go like, ow, ow.
That's not a good brush.
Ow. And if they're thin skinned and if they don't have a really thick coat, it can be really painful. So look very carefully at what kind of brush you're using.
And Dave and Appleton, up next with a question for you. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. My question is, we have a dog we've had for about 6 months and got her completely housebroken and are having no issues other than licking. And we've done the standard where we buy the stuff that tastes bad, spray it on your hands, and she licks it, but she realizes if she licks enough, it goes away and she can continue to do it.
Beat that system. you know, one of the dogs I got is an adult Lassie, who died when she was 16. I still miss her, but my Lassie, I got her when she was a year old, and she actually had been in the shelter. She was a compulsive licker, lick, 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 lick. So it's not that hard to turn around. Here's the good news. One thing you can do if they do it already a lot is start, it seems anti-intuitive, but you just put it on cue. They're already doing it, right? You're not going to make them do it more. It's already a problem. So every time they lick, you go, lick, lick, good girl, lick, lick, good girl, lick, lick, good girl, lick, lick, good girl. Give her treats, give her pets for licking. So she's like, ooh, this is fun. And then once you have it on cue, one thing you can do is ask her to do it when she doesn't want to do it. Like she's really sleepy and you go, lick, lick, come on, lick, lick. And they're like, it becomes less fun. But it also becomes easier once they understand that's the behavior that's up on the table. You say lick, lick, they start licking. Now it's like, okay, we're talking about licking, right? That's what's in your mind. I'm thinking about licking, you're thinking about licking. And then you say, that's enough. And you go pat, pat, twice on the top of their head, pat, pat. Not hard, but enough so it's not stroking. It's like pat, pat. Dogs don't like that. And then you body block her away. You pull your hands in, you sort of push her very gently away with your torso. And then get her interested in something else. And that, it only took me, Lassie was really a compulsive licker. She'd get like blank eyed doing it. And it took me about 3 months to get it turned around. It's very, very doable.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jillian in Madison, we give you a chance now. Hi, Jillian. Jillian, are you there?
Is it Joanne?
Oh, Joanne. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Patricia, we have a 4-year-old Australian Shepherd that we adopted from rescue about 8 months ago. Here's your typical conversation. A wonderful dog, but there's always a but.
Right. right.
Yeah, he's a very mellow dog 95% of the time. He's very attached to me and my husband. We love him. If anybody he doesn't know very well comes to the house or, heaven forbid, rings the doorbell, he just goes into what I've been told is his alert mode. There's somebody here. Bark, 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 bark. And it can take as long as they're here sometimes to get him calm down. He is getting better.
Okay.
I just wondering if you have any insights. Plus, we're about to go into the camping season, and we're going to have him in our camper, and I'm wondering if he's going to do this to everybody who walks by in the campground.
Probably.
Yeah, probably. He might. There's some dogs. A lot of dogs are worse on territory at home, but he might also do it at the camper. But if you're into it, you can also think of the camping as a great opportunity because you're going to get lots and lots of opportunities to teach mm-hmm. him a different response. So mm-hmm. here's a couple things I do. First of all, the goal is to teach him, we love it when visitors come. We don't need to be afraid of them. You know, a lot of the herding dogs are shy. They're afraid of unfamiliar people. Aussies are famous for being not only a little neophobic, but also a little, I don't know, there's a sort of like suspicious. There's like, yeah, like, who are you? Like, what are you doing here? You know, I always feel like they should be FBI agents or something. So the first thing you're going to do is forget about the visitors, believe it or not, and just work on the doorbell, because that turns out to be an incredibly powerful, classically conditioned trigger that, just like smelling food gets dogs to salivate, gets neophobic dogs to become on alert, as you say. So you're going to ring the doorbell when you come home. You're going to ring the doorbell 15 times in the row and throw some treats on the ground for him. So he's like, I love it when the doorbell rings, because mm-hmm. mom comes home. You start coming through the door that visitors come through when you come home.
No, we don't right now. So that's an issue, I bet.
Yeah. And who does, you know, right? Yeah. We all go through the back door, through the carport, or the, you know, whatever. And we don't really think about the fact that there's the visitor door. And there's the doorbell. So you start coming through that door. You start ringing the doorbell. And it's when you come home normally. And also do it during training exercises. So you're going to have a family member or friend, or you're just going to just put your hand around the door, you know. You're standing at the door at the entrance. You put your hand around, ring the doorbell. And if you get your visitor voice on, by the way, we all have one. I didn't even know this till I started being an applied behaviorist. But it's like, hi, how are you? Good to see you, right? You change your voice.
Pitch goes up.
And your dog goes, rawr, 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 rawr. Yeah, good observation, Larry. It's like Larry the Auto Man, right? He knows exactly what it is that changed about my voice. I love that. Good ethology. So you get your visitor voice on, and so you start slowly figuring out all the triggers that gets this alerting response mm-hmm. and condition a different emotional response so that his external behavior changes. Cautious Canine is a booklet that I talk about how to do this a lot. So so do that at your home, mm-hmm. and then on your camping trip, every time somebody walks by, if you can get him, especially before he launches, before he starts to bark or lunge or even get stiff, you could even put it on cue. It's like, oh, look, look, who's that? Treat, look, who's that? Treat, look, who's that? Treat. And then he'll start looking on his own. And then eventually what you're going to get is you're going to get a dog who sees somebody, looks at you and like, hello,
where's
yo. And that's great. And then you can start winding down on the treats. And eventually, a year from now, you won't have to give any at all.
There you go. Good luck.
Okay. I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling. Patricia McConnell, our guest today, certified applied animal behaviorist. She has many books out. Her latest is Love Has No Age Limit, Welcoming an Adopted Dog into Your Home. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join in our conversation, we finally have an open line or two at 1-800-642-1234. Visiting with Patricia McConnell today about her book, Love Has No Age Limit, Welcoming an Adopted Dog into Your Home. We had an email from Helen in Mountain, Wisconsin. Patricia, we have a 10-year-old Cocker Spaniel about to adopt a 7-year-old Cocker from a rescue. I'm driving 4 hours to get her on Saturday. She's been described as house-trained, sweet, loves to cuddle. Our current dog, Trixie, is very laid back, and we think the introduction will go smoothly. Just ordered your book from Amazon, and we'll get it Saturday while I'm on the road. Any words of wisdom for me while I wait to get your book?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And this is so great to hear this story. Good for you for going to get this little dog who needs a home. I hope things go well, and I'm guessing that they probably will. A couple of tips is when you introduce the dogs, do it outside. Do it in as open area as you can. If they both need to be unleashed, keep the leashes really loose and don't hover. And that's the most... That's what we do, you know? Yeah. That's our natural behavior, is we're sort of standing in a circle around the dogs and we're leaning forward and looking at them. We stop breathing, you know? Is it going to be okay? Is it going to be okay? And that adds this tremendous amount of tension. You want to do the opposite. You want to stand up, put your shoulders up, turn away from the dogs if you can. Keep your eye on them, but turn away. Keep the leashes loose. If you can get away with no leashes, maybe have one dog on leash in case you need to grab it, or drop the leashes. Do it outside. Fenced yards are great. Off territory is great if you could do it in a neutral place. And then when it's time to go in the house, let's assume everything went great. It's time to go in the house. Bring the new dog in the house first. Keep the resident dog out. So basically, rather than having the resident dog be inside and this stranger walks in through the door, you're going to have it in reverse. And so that you get, I think it intuitively does, it sort of makes sense,
yeah,
Larry, just intuitively,
I think so.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
For whatever reason, it works better. I can tell you that from an anecdotal, not a research perspective, but a clinical perspective after 20 whatever years it is always goes better if you do it that way. So that's one thing to do. If your resident cocker is a little possessive over something, then be sure to take, if it's toys or objects, be sure to take those away. Feed them separately. Just go really, really slowly and give each dog a chance to just get away from the other one, decompress, and be quiet. And, you know, otherwise, then, you know, everything that happens next is going to be more based on them. But don't worry about a little growl here or there. That is not cause for panic. If it gets worse, then you might want to call the foster or somebody who's line. And by the way, that's another good tip, is line up a backup helper. Line up. Who am I going to call? You know, it's like Ghostbusters, you know, right? Who are you going to call? Have somebody lined up where, like, you know, if I don't know what to do, I can call this person and I can get advice. I can get somebody to listen to me. It's always nice to know you have a backup. Backup plan, advisor, helper, supporter, cheerleader, fan, coach, person.
There you go. And back to grooming for just a minute. Susan, a dog groomer from Oregon, said that owners often use brushes on curly-haired dogs, and it's really doesn't get to the undercoat. She recommends a metal comb instead.
Oh, I love, thank you, groomer, somebody, the expert, you know. Thank you for calling so much. Yeah, I have... Oh, I'm not a groomer, and I actually, when I first started doing this with my partner, Nancy Raffetto, Larry, when we first opened up shop, got our PhD, opened up shop, and I got a call at my home at midnight, literally. Someone said, do you groom poodles? I said, I couldn't groom a poodle if my life depended on it, you know? So I have, but I don't know anything really about grooming a dog professionally. But boy, I've got like 6 brushes, 3 metal combs. They're all different sizes. And I find it's really helpful to have a good toolbox. Yeah. So thank you for that tip. As I know, with some of the dogs with a lot of undercoat, it really is hard. A lot of the brushes, they just skim over the top, and you really do need to get down. And the combs don't seem to bother them as much, by the way. I'd love to hear from the groomers out there if that's true. My experience, my limited experience, it seems like the combs don't bother, unless they're snagging on some kind of snag, that doesn't seem to bother the dogs as some of the brushes do.
Let's go to Cheryl in Superior next. Hi, Cheryl. Thanks for calling.
Hi. My question is how to desensitize a golden retriever who is afraid of gunshots, thunder, fireworks,
loud noise,
to the point where now she has to have Valium.
Oh, yeah. And July 4th is coming up.
Yeah, and actually there'll be July 3rd and 4th and 5th and 2nd. There's a lot of fireworks. Many communities are doing it over an extended period of time.
That's right. That's a really good point. Thank you for adding that in, Larry, because that's really important. You need to be ready long before the actual 4th, you know, especially since the 4th this year is on Monday. A lot of stuff is going to happen on Saturday and Sunday, right? So that's a really good point. You know, there's probably, I don't know, I wish I knew what percentage of the United States population dreads July 4th, but it's a significant amount because we have dogs, or sometimes cats, sometimes horses, but more often dogs, who are terrified of fireworks or thunder. This sound phobia is a big, big problem. And I'm really glad that you have medications on your side, because that's often a very helpful adjunctive kind of therapy. You know, especially, there's no time to condition this dog and get it all fixed between now and July 4th, right? So remember, if you're using some kind of a doctor, your veterinarian, but remember, if you certain medications, you need to give them well in advance. Some you give just when you're expecting something, some when you give sort of every day. I would definitely consider something that's going to last for every day for the
several
next
days.
Week or so, if you're talking about medication. The other thing you can do is a standard counter-classical conditioning paradigm where you get a dog used to low intensity of sound. There are recordings you can get of fireworks, of thunder, that you can gradually up the amplitude. The trick with that is a dog often will just learn, a sound from that speaker. So the research that Elizabeth Schull-Seltzer did found that she had to have speakers above the dog for the dog really to generalize it to external sounds like fireworks or especially thunder. And then but the idea is that you gradually turn the sound up as every time the dog hears something, he gets something he really, really loves. So usually it's food. Willie has developed thunder phobia. My almost 5-year-old border collie classically develops between the ages of 3 and 5. I pretty much predicted this was going to happen because he's such a sound sensitive dog, and it's a big problem in border collies. A lot of the herding dogs are super sound sensitive. Happens in goldens though too. One of my first clients was poor dog. It was a golden in an apartment. He did $10,000 worth of damage after a backfire on the highway a block away. So basically the idea is you're going to create the sound, you're going to give the dog something really wonderful. Now, the problem with July 4th and thunderstorms is you can't control a gradually increasing intensity of the stimulus. So that's when you either use medications I'm not using a medication right now for Willie. I'm going to work through the summer and see how we do. You usually need 2 summers, by the way, 2 seasons of thunder phobia. That might also be true with July 4th. So every time it thunders, basically with Willie now, there was a big storm a week ago, and he's in a crate because he's recovering from surgery. So I got up, he and I lay down together, and every time it thundered, he got his favorite treat. And I basically say, oh, it's thunder. I call them thunder treats. So the idea is hopefully he will start to get so that he likes thunder. So anyway, a gradual increase of intensity. It takes a while. It's going to take a certain amount of time to do it. I'd work on that just quickly. There's some other things you can try. There's body wraps. There's one called a thunder shirt that I think is very well made. That it has an interesting physiological effect. It seems to calm dogs. You know, Larry, how Temple Grandin talks about, as an autistic person, she basically created a sort of a squeeze chute, she called for herself, where she had pressure all over all areas of her body. And that's been found to be very, very helpful for a lot of autistic children. It's the same kind of idea. It changes the physiology. It tends to make dogs less reactive and less fearful. So you could try kind of a body wrap. Thunder shirt is a good one. You can also try adjunctive medicine. You can try aromatherapy. You can try dog appeasing pheromone, which is a pheromone you can't smell it, but the dogs can perceive it. So there's all kinds of things you can try. And I'll just summarize by saying what I've found: every dog is different. Usually it's a combination of those things.
Wow.
So it takes some real input from an owner, but usually it's a combination. And what combination with which dog is very individual.
Thanks, Cheryl, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Jane in Spring Green, we will turn to you next. Hi, Jane.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a question about my 7-year-old adopted shepherd mix. We have another female who's 4, and I take him to the dog park, and he will not allow her to play with any other dogs.
If
he gets into a big running game with somebody else, he won't go after the other dog that's playing, but he'll go after her and bite her in the back legs until she's cowed and she just lays down on the ground and won't move.
the play police.
He is the fun police. Yeah, he will not allow her to have any good time.
Exactly what we call them. And the most, there are lots of dogs who do it, but the most common breeds are German Shepherds and Aussies. And, oh, cattle dogs. Oh, and Border Collies.
And
but do you notice a trend here?
Yeah.
Herding dogs.
It's the herding. Yeah.
They're all, okay. Yeah, they're often, and again, I've seen a Dobie do it, I've seen a Lab do it, but it's most common in the herding breeds. Why? I don't even have a speculation as to why. Because it's not like herding, Larry. It's not like you go over here, it's like, stop that. It's like, you stop that. And I honestly, is it possessiveness? I don't want you to play with him. I know with some dogs, I feel quite confident with some dogs, it's, don't run around. It's driving me crazy. It's like, you know, my father used to hate it when all the kids ran around in the living room. He's like, I'm tired. You know, everybody be quiet. It's like too much stimulus, too much information. Everybody just calm down. So with some dogs, it's that. But with this one, it sounds a little bit more like it's like you can run around, but this dog can't. Maybe it's more like I don't want you to play with other dogs or
He's a little bit feisty with other younger dogs that come up and want to mess with him.
Yeah.
He does better if I leave him off the leash, but I get so nervous that he's going to hurt somebody because he's kind of snapped and gone after a few.
You know, let me ask you this. Do you think this is a dog who really, really loves being in the dog park? Because a lot of dogs actually don't do well in them.
You know, he really just, if he's happy, he goes off by himself and marks. He never wants to interact with anybody. He's just happy being alone and hanging out.
You know, I don't think I'd take him to the dog park.
Yeah.
I really don't. And I know there's so many pluses about a dog park, especially big ones where you can get a nice off-leash walk with your dog. It's a fenced area. It's big. You can take a nice off-leash walk with your dog. But, you know, I would never take Willie to a dog park. He would not enjoy himself, and I would not enjoy myself because he's great with a lot of dogs, but not with, you know, but gets scared and he's not, you know, so I just like, I don't want to be walking along going like, what's going to happen next? What do I have to manage? You know, you should be getting a nice, relaxing, healthy walk too. I would leave him home. I would take your other dog to the dog park. I would get him exercise another way. And I say that completely understanding. It's like, yeah, how much time do I have? Believe me. Boy, do I sympathize. But I'd suggest not taking him to the park.
Patricia McConnell, our guest today. She'll be with us till 12:30 here on the Ideas Network. So happy you're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest and good friend, Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, dog trainer, author of many books. We've been talking a lot about her latest book, which is Love Has No Age Limit, Welcoming an Adopted Dog into Your Home. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. And Merrick in Atlanta, Wisconsin, up next. Merrick, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me on the show. So my question was that our neighbors, they found this five-week-old puppy walking on, like, the road by herself. And we were wondering, like, and we figured out that she's probably a boxer lab. I mean, not a boxer, a pit bull lab mix.
Okay.
And we're wondering what we should do because we're worried about aggression, and we're worried about what we should do.
Okay.
And look for.
Yeah, it's a really good set of questions. I mean, here you got this little five-week-old puppy. You have no idea what its background is. And so the answer to what you should do is obviously not something I have enough information to give you the kind of advice I'd like to give you. But here are a couple of things to think about and look for. One is a five-week-old dog has been separated from his or her mother too early. And one of the biggest problems you see in puppies who are separated from their mom too early is a lack of emotional control. They get aroused really easily, and they sort of can't calm themselves down because I think, we don't know, I haven't seen a lot of good research on it, but if you watch a mother with their puppies, as the puppies get to be 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks of old, part of weaning is mothers basically teaching their puppies to, like, sort of, like, chill out. And, you know, and just calm down. And the mothers will correct them in sort of perfect, wonderful ways. So that's something to think about. Given the breeding, you know, given that it might look like a bully breed, and just FYI, it is impossible to tell at that age. It is absolutely impossible. I mean, all puppies are born pretty much looking the same, except for coat color. And at 5 weeks, they're still awfully young. So it might be a bully breed. It sounds like it probably is. It's really hard to know. But some of the bully breeds, I just evaluated the sweet little pit bull girl. Oh, just the sweetest little sausagey, sweet, just loose body, wiggly little thing you've ever seen. And she's really sweet. But she needed to work on her emotional control, on her arousal. And this is not uncommon in the bully breeds, as they can just get really hyped up really fast. So you've got sort of a double whammy there of potential to think about. If you're a first-time dog owner family, you know, you might be really wise to take this dog to the shelter. Either way, I would definitely get in contact with a local trainer or behaviorist who could help you, maybe evaluate the dog. Once he or she is about 6 weeks of old, 6 weeks of age, you can do some pretty relatively predictive evaluations about certain things. So if it was a little puppy I had, I'd want to turn it over on its back, really gently hold it there, see how it responded, take some food away from it. And you can't, you know, you can never predict 100% or even 80% sure. how a six-week-old puppy is going to act when it's 4 years old. But basically what I found is you can find the outliers, you know. If you have a six-week-old puppy who growls at you over a little piece of food, that's not a good sign. You know, that's like a five-year-old kid picking up a Uzi, you know, mm-hmm. in your kitchen. It's like Children of the Corn, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's scary. So I would consider working with a local trainer or behaviorist to help evaluate the dog for you. I would think very carefully, do we want to, you know, does the family want a dog? Or are we just going to sort of take one because it showed up? And if you're not ready for a dog and ready to invest in the training that's necessary, then you definitely want to contact a rescue organization or a shelter or humane society.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Mary. Appreciate it. And Kathleen in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Larry. And Patricia, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Vizsla who is 6 years old. And I love them. They're energetic, and they like to go under covers, and they like to nip your wrists. But two bad things about Chodash is she's addicted to her Frisbee, one, and I don't entertain a lot, but when I do get guests, she's so jealous of them that she won't leave me alone.
Oh, well, that would be tiresome.
Yes,
yeah.
And some people have said I'm not coming to visit anymore because Chody is so in the way.
Chody, Chody, Chody.
Chody, yeah.
Chody, Chody, Chody.
Hungarian for wonderful.
Oh, that's so sweet. And by the way, I am a big Vizsla fan.
Really?
I just have to tell you, I am amazed. There aren't a lot of breeds I don't like, but uh-huh. I'm just a melty, melty Vizsla fan. I think they're just wonderful dogs.
Yeah.
But but I'm not a big fan of, like, of a dog who is so possessive and demanding of you that nobody else gets to share you either. You sound like a really nice person. So here's what I do. This is a standard trainer technique. We do it all the time. Basically, you look at management. You know, you don't have to train everything out. Life is short. And so the training I would do is I would teach her when company comes, mm-hmm. honey, you go in a crate or you go in the other
right.
room. And you know what? It's really fun. Mm-hmm. So you start teaching her first, no visitors, no doorbell, no knocking, nothing. You're just going to stand at the front door.
Mm-hmm.
You got maybe a stuffed toy in your hand. You got great treats. You're going to go, oh, let's go in your crate. And you're going to run in the crate and you're going to maybe throw a handful of treats in there. You're going to throw a stuffed toy in there. And she's going to run in and you're going to go, good girl, isn't that fun?
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to eat her treats. If she's not food aggressive, you might ask her to come out before she's done.
Uh-huh.
So she's like, what? Wait, no, I don't want to leave the crate now. What?
Uh-huh.
Sort of reverse psychology.
Okay.
And so you're going to do that for a couple of weeks where you do that five times a day where she gets used to, like, oh, we're going to run and get in the crate. And then you do it. Then you ring the doorbell yourself. No real visitor.
Uh-huh.
You're going to run her in the crate. And then you start doing it with real visitors. And basically, you're going to teach her it's fun to go. in the crate when the doorbell rings, when people come. Mm-hmm. If she barks in it, the trick is to not reinforce it while she's barking, which is very difficult. Mm-hmm. Try and ease her way up so you have a visitor. She's only in there for 30 seconds, then she gets to come out.
Okay.
So work your way up such that she's comfortable in the crate when visitors come. And if you want to start teaching her manners while you're out, you might want to have a bait bag that's full of treats right attached to you, so you always have them. You have her on a leash, and you're basically going to use positive reinforcer to teach her to be polite. So maybe a visitor is over. You're going to say, sweetie, lie down, stay. And you're going to give her treats while she's staying. When you release her, it's boring. Nothing happens. You ask her to stay for 3 seconds, then 5, then 10, then 20. And you're basically going to teach her is that when visitors come over, it's okay to sit and lie down. Maybe you teach her to go to a place. That's a great cue. Teach her to go to a place. There's even a device that Sophia Yin, Dr. Sophia Yin, it's Y-I-N. You can go to her website. She has a remote trainer. It's a little plastic food dispenser, and you have a little clicker. So when you click, a piece of food comes out, and you just say, go to your place. The dog goes over there, lies down beside it, and gets a treat. So you could, like, you know, go away. Go away from the front door. Go away from the visitors. Go to your place.
Okay.
So there's lots of things you can do to teach her to do what you do want her to do rather than just trying to stop her from what you don't want her to do.
Okay. Sounds good.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I have an email from Wayne, a veterinarian, who wants to take issue with you on the question of large facilities that produce large numbers of animals for the pet industry.
Oh, good.
He says that it may be true that some of these production facilities are bad, but they're not. They don't represent all.
Well, boy, we could talk about this for a long time, yet there are absolutely a range of facilities. There are, outside of Madison, actually, there's a facility that has, a couple of thousand breeding bitches, and they sell research dogs. So it's a huge facility. I've actually been in it. It's very clean. In my viewpoint, the dogs get very little socialization and very little sort of outside exercise, especially the breeding bitches. And that, but it's very, very clean. It meets FDA standards, for example. And then the other end of the continuum are, again, large scale facilities that are the worst of the puppy mill. And some of them are very small, by the way. I mean, you don't have to be large to mistreat animals, right?
Right.
There are backyard breeders who have just one dog who's being raised in horrible conditions. Actually, one of the sadnesses in Wisconsin is there was a big commercial operation north of Portage. A lot of people called it a puppy mill that sold out. And many of the dogs are actually adopted by Wisconsin Humane Society. They actually bought the facility and the property. It was a wonderful, wonderful thing. It was a wonderful win-win kind of situation. It was a great thing for shelter to do. But before they took in many of the dogs, there were a lot of very, very small operators who came in and adopted a bunch of the dogs and have sort of hidden little tiny, tiny little puppy millettes hidden away in trailers where dogs are being raised in horrific conditions. So yes, it's true that there's a range of facilities, and every large scale facility isn't traumatic. But when I say puppy mill, that is what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about a government inspected facility. I'm talking about a place where dogs are not given adequate care, and there are many, 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 many of them. And if I think most people in Wisconsin went to them, they would cry their eyes out because it's truly tragic. And I see the results of that behavior. Like me, we see the results of it, and it's tragic, and it's often not completely treatable.
Turning to another email from Carol this time, who says, welcome back, by the way, just in time for us as our dogs found a kitten about a year old. He's a lot of fun, but he likes to lay on top of me and knead me. He's very uncomfortable. I've told him I have no milk. Can you suggest some way to make him stop, please?
I'm laughing because when you said he's very uncomfortable, I thought, well, it sounds like he's really comfortable lying on your chest and eating you. But then I realized it meant you. You don't want somebody kneading on your chest. Got it. I was a little slow there. This is another case. First of all, this is a high quality problem because this is a very friendly thing for your cat to do. I am assuming this cat probably has not been declawed. I'm not a fan of declawing. However, I'm not a fan of the claws sinking into my chest skin either. So I am very sympathetic of this. We used to call it happy paws. It's like, ooh, happy paws, not so happy skin, but happy paws. So this is a perfect case of teaching what you do want rather than what you don't want. You know, you could try just every time your cat does it, sort of moving up very abruptly and fast. I caution you, however, because I don't want those claws to sink into you to hold on if all of a sudden you're getting up fast. That's a kind of a punishment related, basically meaning that, you know, when you do that, all of a sudden what you're lying on is going to get up and sort of go away. But again, I caution you about that because I don't want you to get hurt even worse. The best thing to do is to use positive reinforcement to teach your kitten what you do want. So think about, what do I want? Do I want him sitting across the room looking beautiful? Do I want him lying beside me? Do I want him lying on me and not kneading? So figure out what you do want. Get lots and lots of tiny little treats and start reinforcing that. That's the key. So no petting while she's lying there kneading you, but petting and treats when she's doing what you do want her to do. But only you can say what it is you do want her to do. I love having cats lie on my chest, although I can no longer breathe when that happens because I'm allergic. But so it's very individual what you want her to do.
Mike in Waukesha has a question for you. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I got a Border Collie lab mix. He's about 2 years old, and he likes to dig in this one spot. I filled it in like 3-4 times, and just for some reason, he just keeps digging it up. And he gets plenty of exercise. I mean, take him to the park. He runs. He comes back exhausted. We even go swimming. I'm just wondering how to get him to stop.
Yeah, oh, I sympathize. They can dig, they can excavate.
They can dig a lot.
They can create entire dens down there. So, yeah, you do have to be thoughtful. Usually dogs dig. Well, one, dogs seem to love to dig. I mean, a lot of dogs, it just seems to make them happy to dig. But often dogs dig to get to cool ground. So let me ask you, after the dog digs, does he lie down in it?
Know exactly what you're saying. There's a pine tree. I got him. He's got a little pool under there. He's got a nice big dish of water, and then it's kind of, you know, the grass doesn't grow so good under the pine tree.
Yeah.
So he'll dig there a little bit, and then he lays and he'll lay there to cool off.
There you are.
It's like right out in the open sun. It's under where the clothesline goes, and when I fill it up, he's like, okay, try me again. You know.
Yeah, it's like you made it cooler. Good for you. Thank you. Can you create a designated digging place that would meet both of your criteria where you don't mind having this dug-up place but would be a nice, cool, shady place for him to lie in the cool dirt?
Yeah, that's what he's got. It's a big pine tree, and it spreads out. He's got totally shade over. I got one of those little kiddie pools for him, and right there he can dig. He can do whatever he wants, and he does. But there he only goes just, you know, an inch or so deep.
Oh, I see. But there's another place in the yard he digs.
Yeah.
That's
no big deal, you know. And then he lays on that to cool down. But then this one's like right out in the middle of the lawn.
Yeah. So what are you doing in the sun? Yeah. He didn't read my chapter. Apparently he's sort of missing that part. And does he lie down in it?
Yep. No, like, not in the hole that he digs.
Oh.
Not there's the one that's a nuisance.
Oh. I wonder if there's
a tree. Yeah, he'll lay down in that one.
Is there a chance there's something there that he's digging for?
I never thought of that.
Critters, usually they're digging to get cool or they're digging to get something. They're digging to get a gopher. They're digging to get earthworms, believe it or not. They're digging because there's something under there that they can smell. And remember, I mean, it could be 20 feet down and it could be a quarter an inch big and your dog could smell it. So, you know, maybe 80 years ago, somebody buried a bone in there. That's a possibility.
That could be true. I guess my final question would be, is there, after I fill it back in with dirt again and put seed on it, is there something I can do that would deteriorate him from doing that again?
That would stop him. Is he out there by himself when you're not there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the key question. If you're if he's there by himself and you're not there, there are a couple things you can do. One is you could just temporarily anyway until the grass gets established. You can use fencing, you know, some kind of fencing. That's obviously not very pretty, sort of a pain to do, but you can do that. You can spray it. There's some sprays that dogs find offensive. You could shake a lot of pepper. A lot of pepper, like go buy a big, huge can of pepper, but you would have to do that often. That very often will keep a dog from an area. There are some, you can go to Radio Shack or an electronics store, and you can buy some, there are little devices where if a dog crosses a laser beam, an alarm goes off. May or may not bother a lab. He may like, oh, whoa, wow, I made some noise. That's fun. there are some scat mats, they're called, that are, they get a little shock. It's like getting a carpet shock when they walk on them. You'd have to have a cord, and I'd worry a little bit about him chewing on the cord if you're not there. So delete that. Take that. Never mind. Don't do that. But the best thing probably to do is to prevent logistically him from getting there.
Yeah.
Then get it reseeded, and then you might want to give him a second alternative. You know, he might want two places to sleep. A lot of dogs seem to like having two places, so it's really smart often if you have one dog bed to get another dog bed. So try, think about, well, is there another place that I don't mind him digging? And then set him up in the backyard when there's none of these devices around and he doesn't even know you're there. And he starts digging, hopefully not, but he starts digging in the wrong place, and you might want to just poke your head over the fence and go like, oh, what did you do? What did you do? And they're just stunned. It's like, oh, he's everywhere. So don't be yelling, and you know, don't be scary in the sense of like traumatizing him, but just be shocked and appalled. Sometimes that can help.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Julie and Mondovi, on to you. Thank you.
Hi. We have a 2.5-year-old Yorkie, and we had gotten him at about 10 weeks, which I know is kind of early, but that's what when we got him. We crate trained him right away, so he sleeps in the crate at night with the door shut and only uses it for sleeping and riding in the car. And we also have a playpen we use if we have to go somewhere, so he's so little so he doesn't get into things. We have a big house and you know, it's a safe place for him to be in. He's a dog for a 9.5 who is 9.5 year old now. And it seems like he's developing a couple of bad habits. I don't want to know which book you would suggest of yours. But he does have the licking things, licking the master, you know, lick, lick, lick everywhere. And so something that would address that we could buy. And, you know, he does like a sit and a stay, and he's got a few basic. He doesn't get a lot of socialization, so we failed that right now. We'll have to correct that.
Don't worry.
But he has now started doing some growling. He's always been really good with his food, but now, you know, when we give him like a rawhide bone, he will growl and act like he's going to bite at you.
Okay.
And also, we took that away and don't give him anymore, but we give him carrots, and now he's done the issue with the carrots.
Now he's starting to protect his carrots. These are my carrots. You can't have, at least he's doing it over something really healthy, right? Good for you for switching, by the way. Did you say he's 9.5 years old?
No, the boy.
The boy is.
Oh, good. Okay, I'm sorry.
Would the boy be good for training the dog?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, although I wouldn't start him out training about the growling issue. I'd have the adults do that for sure at first. But here's what you want to do. You want to teach your Yorkie that if I take your carrot away, you get something better. So basically, it's influencing his mind such that he associate your coming towards him when he has a carrot with something really, really good. So rather than like, oh, don't come near me, you're going to take away my carrot, I have to protect my carrot, he's going to be like, yo, hello, come over here. So basically you start out, and I don't, by the way, I don't have a booklet specific to that. Gene Donaldson has a booklet called Mine, M-I-N-E, Mine, it's Mine, that's very thorough. It's so thorough, actually, it puts some people off, but it's very good. It's very thorough. You can usually go a little faster than she suggests, but it's a great resource for you. So basically the idea is you're going to let him have a carrot, and he's across the room with a carrot, and you're going to have something better. You're going to have a piece of liver, cooked liver. You're going to have a piece of beef. You're going to have a really great high-quality commercial dog treat that's soft and squishy and really smelly, because dogs love that extra. And so you're going to take one step towards him. Maybe you're 10 feet away. You can take one step towards him, and you're going to toss the treat. So the step leads to the treat. So he starts to learn. You're going to do that over and over and over again. First, it's 10 feet away, and it's one step. Then it's two steps, and then it's three steps. You do that slowly and gradually, such that he learns as my human approaches me, that visual signal of them taking one step towards me leads to something even better than what I have. And then gradually you start trading the carrot for a piece of beef. So that almost always works. The only dog it never worked with well was one lab cross I couldn't get it to work with, and a wolf dog hybrid.
There
so
you go.
Good luck with it.
And Patricia, thank you so much. And you've got a great new book here. I really appreciate it. And your website, we've got it on our Facebook page. So go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can click on Patricia's website.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Always fun.
I hope you'll come back. You will. She's got a big smile. She'll come back again. Patricia McConnell, author of Love Has No Age Limit. She'll be back. And thank you for listening here on the Ideas Network.